Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It's Tuesday after round six. Our teams are back in WA and they've brought Collingwood and Geelong with them. I'm Mark Duffield. I'm the son of a darkened shearer and I'm with Glenn Quartermain, the man who could have been anything but for very, very, very small hands. You're listening to the Duff and Quarters podcast. Quarters, your two highlights of the weekend.
I suspect they're probably the same as yours, Duff. I'm going to say Frio's comeback, if you put a slab of Frio games in, that's one of the great wins of their history. And I'm going to say that debut from Isaac Rankine, closest thing I've seen to Cyril Rioli for a long, 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 long time. And I got really excited watching him, thinking I've got 10 years plus, hopefully, of watching this kid because he is just an excitement machine. You know the goals of the week, how you have three nominations? He could have been all three.
He could have had all of them. Mind you, the Lachie Neal goal was pretty good.
It was, but there's a case for all three Isaac Rankine goals.
Actually, the David Zaharakis goal was pretty good too, I have to say, on the weekend.
There were some great highlights and some pretty bad lowlights at the weekend too, but
We'll get to that. Let's talk about the three Rankine goals first because I'm 56 years old and I found myself shrieking with delight sitting on my lounge. And I'm yelling out to my wife, Sharon, come and watch this. Come and watch what this kid's just done. And I'm explaining to her, he's 19 years old, this kid, you know. And the first one was just pure brilliance. The second one was pure freak show. And the third one was innate football nous, knowing that Max Gawn was going to hit to the boundary and to run past the stoppage on that side of the stoppage at speed, pick the pocket of the Melbourne player waiting for it and got it on the boot.
I'm tipping there's a few nervous defenders out there in AFL land.
Well, I'm tipping he'll get some pretty fierce attention over the coming weeks.
I'm tipping they might not be able to catch him. You got to catch him first off.
I saw him do a similar thing, Quarters, in the 18s, playing for South Australia in a game at Marvel Stadium.
Yes.
And we knew, and I think we might have spoken about it at
the
time.
We did on the podcast.
And what he was capable of and the sort of momentum he could generate in a game of footy. But that was fantastic. The Frio comeback, as you say, 37 points down early in the second quarter. By halftime, their number one ruckman was gone. Their top draft pick from last year, who's been in pretty good nick, playing off halfback, was gone. He was gone by quarter time. They had none of their four best tall defenders playing. They had their captain marooned in the goal square, which was partly about the midfield minutes they'd allocated to him because of his so soon after a hamstring, and partly about a corky that he had.
Well, maybe they read the Duff column saying he needs to be parked at full forward.
I was talking to someone close to Nathan and he laughed because he said they are planning to send Nathan forward more. But I suspect that had Nathan not had the corky and not been 13 days on from a hamstring.
Yeah, start of the last quarter, he's going in the guts.
Well, I'm thinking the last stoppage, he's in the guts.
Oh, he is.
I'm thinking he would have been in there.
But that's great for Frio as well. I mean, we can say the same about Carlton, who we'll talk about a little later, but, you know, that they can get the job done with him not in the middle. So just tick, tick, tick for Frio. And I feel like it didn't get – I don't think they did it justice across the country, that comeback at the weekend.
Yeah, well, we all – look, your perspective is – where you view it from, and obviously over there they saw other things as caught their attention more. But certainly from a West Australian perspective, that is a significant result for Fremantle. Significant that Andrew Brayshaw again stood up when it mattered.
Yes.
Let's not forget Michael Walters in amongst all of that, apart from kicking the ball the wrong way at the first bounce.
And then the 50 metres
at the end.
Yeah.
He manufactured the brilliant kick forward that found Blake Akers, that went to Bailey Banfield, that ended up with Lachie Schultz for the winning goal.
And also the ruckman who wants to play forward, that long tail now.
Yep.
Keeps getting the job done when he's thrown in there, Rory Lobb.
And Walters also was the critical last clearance. Walters was also pivotal.
Well, redeemed himself from that 50-metre penalty for sure. And you could see, just watching it, you could see he wanted to redeem himself, and he did.
Yeah, so that was well done. A mighty effort, I think, by the back line. No tall defenders. You feared calamity every time because St Kilda eventually worked it out. When they made their last run from three goals down in the last quarter, they worked out, geez, they haven't got any tall defenders. Let's just get it in there and get it in there high. Of course, Tim Membry plucked a couple.
Yep.
Kicked a couple of goals, got them back in the game. I suspect that the Fremantle will be sweating very, very hard on Brennan Cox's fitness this week before the Western Derby, because if they can't find a tall defender going up against Josh Kennedy, Jack Darling and Oscar Allen and Jake Waterman floating around on the flanks, I fear what for could the happen? Outcome in the Western Derby.
Yes, yeah, of course. And there's also concerns, conversely, for St Kilda, I guess. There's two games this year where they have just been nowhere in that second half.
So you suspect quarters, I think there's a lot of kudos going to St Kilda because of their commitment to attack. And obviously we'll get to later in this podcast talking about the aesthetics of the game and how it's looking. St Kilda's winning a lot of praise because they're playing good-looking football. But when you play good-looking football, you invest very heavily on offence. And sometimes that leaves you vulnerable the other way. And once Fremantle were able to stymie their offence.
2.5 quarters though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not good enough. 2.5 quarters. Just to go missing in action for a team who there's a bit of talent there.
Maybe that's method.
Yeah, you
know, maybe that's method. Sometimes, you know, I don't think an entire team goes missing for 2.5 quarters. Brad Hill went missing.
Yeah. It's the quarter's curse.
Brad Hill, five.
I keep writing about these guys, and the following Saturday, that afternoon, they go missing. But
that was a beautiful piece, by the way, that you wrote.
Mate, hopefully, I can correct that.
And conversely, Stephen Hill, the handball over the shoulder back into the centre square, which led to the Michael Walters kick forward to find Akers, that was class.
Well, there's the elite disposals of Stephen Hill. He's always had it. He's just the last couple of years been a soft tissue curse. Let's hope he can get string a few games together because no one more vital to that side than Stephen Hill when he's up and running.
Yeah, magnificent ball user. Okay, so Freo wins 2 on the trot, comes back here 2-4, plays in the Derby on Sunday. The team that they play quarters, West Coast, I thought we saw more of the old West Coast.
I think we've seen, but the last 2 weeks – less so the previous week and then a bit more last weekend. I think the key last weekend was Tim Kelly.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Shuey's been out. So that midfield, when he comes back in, and it's a possibility this Sunday, but I'm thinking not.
Mm.
That'll be interesting because there's a lot of riches there and it's not that easy. It's not it's as simplistic as to say, let's just chuck a heap of guns in the middle. You've still got to work together and find room to work together. So that's been a work in progress, but they're getting better at it. And, yeah, there was a lot to like about them. And now, of course, they're going to have a string of home games. So it really is set up for the Eagles to have a bit of a run at it now. We'll see this week. I'm still reserving my judgment a little bit. I'm not sure who they've beaten the last couple of weeks, but they've done the job.
Yeah, Adelaide clearly are struggling at the moment. The Riley O'Brien.
Sensation. We love it. I love that. I mean, yeah, look, Adelaide can't take a trick. I thought Adelaide handled it pretty well. When that tweet dropped, that was a disaster. But they handled it pretty well. They got straight on the front foot and said, yep, we stuffed up. He got on, made a comment. It wasn't meant to be. And I thought the way they played the game was first class. And I love the stuff after the siren with the handing over the phone. That's good footy. That's good substance, good footy substance. We all loved it. More of that, please.
So at the end of the day, Nick Natanui won the battle because he won the battle around stoppage. And he was a dominant player at stoppage. I think he got coaches' votes. I think the coaches had him either the third or fourth best player on the ground. But in terms of what Riley O'Brien said he needed to do.
He did.
In his notes, which became in his tweet. Yeah. He did. He walked the walk. He got around the ground. He took 10 marks. He had 19 disposals. And he competed.
He can play. I think you know when you've played against Riley O'Brien because he's a physical contest.
But there was that moment early in the game where Nick got the ball off a stoppage in the forward pocket and snapped it off his left foot. And that was one of the more pointed points.
Yeah, that one's for you. I think it was something along those lines. And also, I believe at the first bounce down, there was a bit of a stare off.
There was a bit of a stare off, and I think the knee might have found the ribs at well, the first bout.
As it should. That was fantastic. More of that, please.
So what would you give West Coast comes back. They're 3-3. Like Fremantle, they were 2-3 in the hub. Their victories
come I reckon over. 2 in the hub's a good result.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing the mixed results from Victorian teams who've now entered the hub. It's hard. Mm. It is hard. So I think you'll take that. Going forward, I reckon, for the Eagles. And I think it's a good result for the Dockers as well. It's not been – the losses in the hub weren't a disaster for the Dockers. I think what they hoped for when they entered the hub was a bit of group unity. I think they got that.
Yeah.
They seem to handle the hub better than the Eagles.
Yeah.
But the Eagles have come out of it with 2 wins on the trot. So I think it's a pretty good position for both WA teams right now.
All right. So – one of the other great talking points of the weekend, of course, was the tete-a-tete between
I love that
Premiership
too.
Coaches John Longmire and Damien Hardwick.
See, and, oh,
after what was an absolute snooze fest.
3 goals between them after quarter time. I was actually at a kid's party and I was watching it on my phone watching the scores on my phone and watching a bit of video on my phone, and I just could not believe it. It really was unwatchable. Apparently the underarm from 81 was on at the same time, and that was people were switching over to it because it was just you could not watch this game of football. I love the post-match stuff. You had Dimmer saying that it was a shocking
horrendous.
Game of football, and it's horrendous, and it's all your fault, Horse, and it was Horse getting on the front foot and saying, no, well, you put an extra man up the ground in as well. So
for those technically minded footy fans, and not everybody is, some footy fans just go, well, we want to see a better-looking game than that. Mm. But basically what Richmond do is Richmond will take an extra one of their 6 forwards, they will take up the ground into play and around the stoppage. That's part of their structure. And then it becomes a matter for the other coach to decide what he wants to do about that. And what John Longmire did about that was he left his defender behind the ball. And obviously he has 2 very smart defenders in Jake Lloyd and Callum Mills, and they basically picked off a lot of Richmond's attacks. Dustin Martin, who was going to be, you know, probably Richmond's primary target in attack, he wasn't able to get space. There was always traffic around him. So you had basically a game of glorified kick-to-kick going on where Sydney were rebounding the ball from D50 and Richmond were pumping it in there but not able to score. The debate over how the game is looking at the moment, Quarters, what do you make of
it? Look, I think there are actions we can take, but I think we need to be careful looking at the sample of this season. It's not a normal season. Shorter quarters, players aren't able to, certainly contact at training is minimal. It's been compromised training. It's not a normal slab of game. So we need to be careful about what we're measuring this year. However, I think there are measures we can take. I mean, if you look at the maybe distance of kicks, the 666 rule, maybe parking that permanently. There are some calling for that. I think there are measures we can take. I don't like flooding. I don't like numbers behind the ball. I don't like numbers around the stoppage. I'd be happy to see that go.
Yeah.
And as long as there is a capability of it, coaches will maximise it because we're there to win games of footy.
Mm.
I don't mind Longmire and Dimmer having a crack at each other. What did Longmire say? He called me after the game and I accepted his apology, but I said, it's out there now.
It's out there, yeah.
And now we have to talk about it. We'll be talking about it, you know. So, I don't know. Part of me too thinks that the coaches are very frustrated. Players and coaches, I think, are frustrated with the lockdown, with the quarantine. it's been difficult. So I think that's sort of manifesting itself a little bit in the aftermatch. We saw it with Clarko a few weeks ago and we saw it at the weekend. So I reckon there's a bit of that as well.
So a couple of points, I reckon. First point, in fairness to John Longmire, Sydney are now basically bereft of height.
Yeah.
So there is no Lance Franklin. There is no Sam Naismith. There is no Callum Sinclair. There is no Tom McCartan.
How far is Buddy away?
Still 2 or 3 weeks, yeah. I believe. I think it was a pretty big hammy.
Yep.
And obviously he has, you know, historical issues there. They lose Josh Kennedy early in that match, and Isaac Heaney was on one good ankle for most of that match. Now, when you factor all those things in, and he was able to manufacture a game style.
Well, they were a chance to win late.
Where with 3 minutes to go, they're still alive in the game. Now, what's John Longmire supposed to do? Is he supposed to do a Brett Ratton and open the game up and play really attractive footy and lose by 10 goals?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that his fans are going to be happy with that. And I'm not sure that his board is going to be happy with that. So,
well, what did he say? He said, what was I meant to do? Go and knock on Dimmer's coaching box door and say, oh, mate, what do you want me to do to make the game look better?
Yeah. So, you know, I think John Longmire has a valid defence in all of this. Interestingly enough, Quarters did a press conference with Chris Scott this morning via Zoom. Obviously, he's in town with Geelong in the hub. And he made the point, he said, critics of the game and the way the game is being played at the moment, he said they need to pick a side. Because he said some of them say the game is overcoached and that coaches are the reason why we have unattractive footy. And there's others that are saying that in this unusual year, coaches haven't had enough contact with their players and basically haven't been able to coach enough. And that's why we're seeing some pretty unattractive games. He said, basically he was saying, pick your poison. You know, which is it? You know, do we coach too much or haven't we been able to coach enough? Which I think is a valid point. He did make the point that it has been a difficult season, that as you made the point, they haven't had a lot of contact with players. It's been hard for players to train together enough to develop real cohesion as we would normally expect from them. And the games are still played at very high intensity. So you've got players that are maybe don't have their skills as finely honed as they normally would be at this point in the season. The other thing that Chris Scott said is that he believes it will get better as the season goes on, as players warm to it.
Mm.
But don't be surprised if...
I'm not so convinced this year. I think we just have to park it this year.
Yeah.
And maybe have a look at the sample next year and see what we can do there. I'm not sure if it's also... I mean, we saw something we should discuss stuff as well. I mean, we saw the... I think there were 5 cases of
the bump
this week. Whether that's a result of the lack of physical training at training, the lack of ability to do that, whether and the frustrations of players and the congestion, all those things.
Well, they're living
together.
Abnormal lives, aren't they? Like you mentioned about the coaches getting a bit snippy after the game. Maybe the players are getting a bit snippy as well. Maybe they're a little bit more on
edge. I'm not letting them off the hook, by the way. I think several of those incidents should be penalised. I think Long should get every bit of 3+. And I didn't like it at all. I didn't like Shields.
No.
I just think that if you run past the ball and choose to bump and hit someone in the head, you should go. And
I reckon Eberts was every bit as bad.
Yeah, it was.
He was lucky that Perryman got up.
It was. We learnt nothing, Duff. We need to act on this. And I think we will. I hope we do.
So in your mind,
if Shield comes down.
Three or four for Long.
I think he should get 4.
Yeah, me too.
He's lucky. It wasn't. When I saw that, I thought it was the point of the hip.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I thought, that's a depressed fracture of the cheekbone. That's massive concussion. You won't even be able to fly home in a pressurised cabin. And that's a nightmare. That's what I was thinking straight away.
Mm.
But then I obviously didn't get the point of the hip. It's still a very, very big whack. And, I mean, that's exactly the sort of stuff we're talking about. Even if it's not concussion, that's a subconcussive knock. And this is the stuff we don't want in our game.
That's also the wheelchair one, the Darcy one. Which is the real worry.
Yep.
You know, the paraplegia.
Yes, it is. It is.
It's when the guy's going down and leaning forward and the bloke comes in and hits him, that's when the spine can snap and then you've got a real issue on
you.
As far as
Shield goes, I think he should go. If they appeal and bring it down, I won't like that. But when he does go, as I expect him to, I guess you've got to feel a bit of sympathy for him. Because
The irony
that Trent Cotchin performed exactly the same act on him in a preliminary final putting him out of the game and probably costing GWS that game.
Certainly
altered the course of it.
Whether it
cost them or not, we don't know, but it certainly helped Richmond win. And Cochin got off and played in the grand final the next week. Now, great.
So the moral of the story is?
You tell me. I think, do it in the final.
Do it in the final. No, I agree. I think that, and Chris Scott, again, when he was speaking on these matters this morning, made a really good point. He said, I am not suggesting for a minute that Ben Long should get leniency, but he said, I would urge some empathy because he said the clubs or the players are dealing, making split seconds decision. He said, if you don't go hard, you're criticised for pulling out. And he said, if you go hard and get it slightly wrong, he said, basically, this is what you cop. And he's absolutely saying he has to be suspended for that. But he is making the point, these are split seconds decisions that
I'm not sure. I can't go inside his head and understand what he was trying to do. But for me, I don't think there was much of the ball in that.
Oh, no, I reckon he was doing the old put your bum into the other guy.
Well, he did it several times in the game. We saw some footage last night.
Yeah, but.
Well, he needs to revise that technique or at least revise that. That was really dangerous, as you said.
But you can't do that and not reach for the ball. The ball was there. He moves to the side and past it and hits Darcy. Now, if he just turns his bum and takes the ball, the reality is the contact with Darcy is greatly diminished and probably would be as much the result of whatever Darcy did as what Long did. But he's basically crashed into a guy's head. And so that's 3 to 4 weeks. Absolutely agree with the irony about Dylan Shield. But Dylan Shield ran past the ball.
Yep.
To hit Curtis Taylor. And let's not forget, Curtis Taylor's a kid. So, not that there's
birth. I don't really think that matters too much. I think if you hit them, you hit them. If you run if you choose to bump, you run past the ball, you hit someone in the head. If you choose to bump and you hit someone in the head, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And you should be.
Agreed.
We should touch on fixturing firstly before we talk about the horrible performance by Hawthorne, which I know you're salivating over.
I just can't wait to get to
So a new set of fixtures is out, obviously. We've just discovered Carlton and Hawthorne are going to be here in a rolling hub.
Yep.
And Freo playing on a Monday night, which is fantastic news for Freo.
Yeah, and you know what? A great time to try it when you're only looking at getting 30,000 people there. I think that's a good time to try it.
Well, you know my thoughts, in a normal world, I love Thursday to Monday. Yeah. I love that stretched out fixture over a weekend. I think there's too much footy on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's coming from someone who had a diet of 6 games on a Saturday. But I think we stretch it from Thursday to Monday. I love it. Gives you a chance to really take in each game.
I reckon you got to be careful where you put the games on Monday. Because it's always difficult. The thing about Optus Stadium is a magnificent stadium. I think the best stadium in Australia, probably one of the best stadiums in the world. But the big issue we have is that because we're 2 hours behind Melbourne, one, you don't want to play the games too late because Monday means people have got to get up and go to work and get the kids to school on Tuesday. So that's going to put a few people off. But two, you don't want to play them too early because if people are coming from a work environment on a Monday and trying to get to a game – then that makes it difficult.
I don't necessarily think Optus is the venue for regular Monday night fixtures.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to see Freo getting a standalone. I think it's great to see.
And what about Gold Coast? Getting their first ever marquee time slot.
Brilliant. Love it.
And quarters, how's this? This was raised on one of the programs last night. Gold Coast is a chance to be running 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the Rising Star. So you'd have to say...
So we're talking Rao, Rankine.
Well, Rao's still in front, isn't he?
Rao, Rankine. We had the three. Yeah, okay. Rao's still in front.
Rankine.
King.
No, Anderson.
Anderson, yes.
And the fourth one is Butterick.
Yes.
The little back pocket player who plays with a lot of polish and a lot of flair and takes the game on. Now, I tend to think.
King not eligible?
Not sure. Yeah, he'd be close.
Might be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, mate.
He'd be close.
By the season's end.
His brother would be eligible.
Yeah, he would be, yes.
He can play a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Good draft, that one.
Yes.
Last year's draft is going to be a good one as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Hawthorne. Come on.
Horrible Friday night.
They stunk it up, mate.
That was the lowest score under Clarko. There were some other figures that's jumped out. That was a horrible brand of footy. it was really hard to watch. You knew halfway through the first quarter, no chance of winning that game with the style they were producing. It was just all over the shop and lateral to nothing. It was just bereft of run. Really concerning was the ease of Collingwood players to go through the corridor.
Yeah.
Barely a tackle laid, et cetera.
But if you're playing that possession style,
yep.
It means you have to spread out, doesn't it? Because how do you move the ball? You move the ball by spreading out.
I think they thought they were the 2013, 14, 15, probably 16 Hawks, and they are not. Debate, I'll just say this. I'll temper the debate a little bit. Hawthorn does – I don't think this squad is going to win a flag. I think when a few players retire, that average age will come down a bit. But the kids are a worry. I think they do have to go the draft rather than rely on trading in. I think it's going to have to be get some early draft picks in. I think that's a priority for Hawthorn now. But I will also say – they have played five of last year's top six and they're 3-3.
Yeah, it's been a tough draw.
So that's not – I'm not going to read the epitaph just yet, Duff, for this season. I don't think Hawthorn – I said all along I think they're bottom end of the eight, they'll finish. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a few good wins in Hawthorn this year. But I'm not – I don't think it's as dire as everyone's saying. But I guess on the back of that sort of performance, and when you look back a few weeks earlier, that performance against Geelong – it's pretty hard not to draw those conclusions. But I still think there's a bit there. And I think Jarman Impey's back in a week or two. He's going to be massive.
So he gives them run and pace. But
they need that.
And he takes the game.
And they are very tall and down, slow, tall and slow down back.
So why doesn't he change that, Dave? Like,
well, McAvoy, as we've said,
to go from
go in the ruck.
Yeah.
He's a quality ruckman. He's a premiership ruckman. I think you've tried it. And when you get it on your terms, it works well, but it wasn't on your terms the other night. And it, you know, they need to change things up a bit. And I think he would acknowledge that. Be really interesting to see the response against Melbourne this week. Melbourne, who you can't trust. Who knows what that game's going to throw up this weekend.
Yeah, and on Melbourne, well done to Harley Bennell. Got through the game, played increased game time, kicked the goal at the end.
And there's a lot of love for Harley. When he kicked that goal, just about every player jumped on top of him. That's good to see. So a lot of love for him. And, look, please, footy gods, shine on him. Let's not have any injuries. We want to see him get through a slab of games.
So the other side of the coin from Hawthorn, of course, was the other team that is in the hub in Perth, which is Collingwood.
Yep.
You know what I loved about Collingwood? On the weekend, and obviously Will Kelly kicked the great goal and then got injured.
Yeah, that was.
I don't want to see that again. The way his ankle, his elbow dislocated on the way down. But I loved Isaac Quayner's game.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
And I loved R2 Basenavalangi.
Oh God, I'm glad you. I was just going to say R2 Duff.
R2 Basenavalangi, and I pronounced it wrong on radio, and I got a clip from one of the viewers on Sunday morning. So
did you? That's a bit harsh.
So I've done my best.
We need at least a season.
Clint Wheeldon got me through it. He said the Islanders, he said, basically, if there's a G, there's an N. Even if there's not an N, there's an N.
I just have to phonetically just space the word out, and that's the way to do it.
Quayner's kicking to me was a highlight, the depth and penetration in his kicking, and that opened up a lot of possibilities for Collingwood. And Basenavalangi, just pace and real purpose around the ball and take the game on. Other highlights for Collingwood quarters, Darcy Moore is now probably the premier defender in the comp.
Yep. He is now that Howe's out.
Now that Jeremy Howe's gone. And also they shifted Jamie Elliott into a more midfield role.
Yeah.
And got a great result.
They did. At the weekend I think it was probably easier. And Friday night I think it was probably a bit easier to do against that Hawthorn side. We'll see what happens there.
And Jaden Stevenson got around the ground more.
Yeah, he did.
So
yeah.
he was up in attack at times, but he was also...
Lots to like about them. I did like Will Day's game for Hawthorn, his debut. I thought he showed a lot under immense pressure. And the one concerning thing for me, again, from Collingwood was fast starts, slow finishes. We've seen it all year.
Yes,
so that may come back to bite them later in the year. I suspect it's just a trend at the moment. We're only six rounds in, so let's not get too worried about it.
Yes, of course, Brody Mychek again, that workman-like forward bobbed up again and kicked four goals.
He did, yeah. Was he on Sicily for a fair slab of that early?
Well, Sicily got coaches' votes, I reckon. So he was the
He did get coaches' votes.
He was the one Hawthorn player in the coaches' vote. So whatever role he was supposed to be playing, one of the
I reckon early he was on him and then they got him off him and he played that role he plays so well. But, yeah, not a lot to like, but don't lose too much faith.
Yeah, no,
But they do need to – there's got to be a point where – and, look, the other interesting thing, we saw Jordan Lewis come out, really interesting being a former player, and it's suggesting that
– does Clarko have the energy?
Well, yeah, and I don't think it was – let's not read – I think he was raising – he's paid to be – for his comments, and good on him, but he was suggesting that – still a great coach, but does he have the energy? Because it's a 3 to 4 year rebuild.
But is it a rebuild? We've seen clubs like Geelong have evolved and kept themselves relevant.
Well, Hawthorn has done that. I think Hawthorn's done that. But if you look at who's closer to a flag, it's Geelong. I think Hawthorn right now needs
only
kids.
This year, probably.
Yeah, I don't even need kids. Hawthorn needs kids, mate. They definitely need to go and get top-end draft picks. And you look back and you look at the Port Adelaide year when Burton went to Port and Hawthorn got Wingard and we missed out on Rosie, et cetera. You look at that and you think, Wingard's been pretty good this year. He'd be in the frame for All Australian. Wasn't so good on Friday night, but he'd be just about leading Hawthorn's BNF at the moment. So Wingard's been pretty good for Hawthorn. I reckon it's critical time for them to make that decision, and I think they need to.
So let's go through a few dot points very quickly before we get on to Josh's mailbag.
Yes.
Port Adelaide, fantastic, but GWS, how concerned are you about GWS?
It's round six, so I think we've seen enough of the good GWS. I'm not overly concerned. When it goes really bad for them. What I'm really worried about them is their use. They are elite users of the footy.
And right now very timid.
That's
about the
right.
Way they go about it.
Yeah, and we saw a couple of, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, we were concerned they were going to the shallow part of the ground and they weren't being adventurous enough with their ball use. I think they need to be more adventurous and just take it on, take the shackles off a little bit. I mean, of course, they need to have some defensive work ethic as well. But look, for me, they're still top four. I think they'll get there.
Okay.
I really like Port. Maybe.
Do you like Kane Farrell's left foot?
Geez, he can kick the foot. He can hoof it, can't he? Yeah. Oh, I like Kenny Hinckley's little song in the after the match too. Yeah, in the circle.
Kenny, my advice: stay out of the disco.
Oh, I don't like that. Nah,
it was great for us to watch.
He's a Made of Life member. Oh, that's Kenny.
Yeah.
I think be yourself.
Kenny from Camperdown.
I don't mind that. I don't want robots. Carlton, impressive.
Yep.
Very impressive, actually. And the best thing about Carlton's performance is Cripps was injured early.
Yep.
And they did it without him. And I think Doherty didn't have the influence he normally does either.
No, that's so right. Doherty's been well looked after the last couple of weeks.
So a lot to like about them. And Mackay. Swan Mackay, remember David Mackay all those years ago?
Yeah, number 43, used to float in.
Bit of an omen there for Carlton supporters. Just a lot to like about them. And Eddie Betts chips in again, not just goals but score involvements.
Yeah, I'm not convinced Eddie's going to have that big an impact.
Yeah, well, we said that pre-season, but he's been okay.
Yeah.
He's been okay so far. Richmond, Sydney we've spoken about. I think Essendon deserves a mention here. Slipped under the radar a bit. And defensively, the big bugbear about Essendon over the last few years has been defensively.
So Ben Rutten was the defensive coordinator at Richmond, and Blake Carosella is known to have a very high footy IQ. So I think they've been great additions to the Essendon coaching
staff. And where are they? They are fourth on the ladder.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show. Melbourne, still not convinced. I will say Petraka's having a good season. More consistency.
Needs to get better with the ball.
Yes, he does, but he's been more consistent. We've seen him have a blinder and then 3 weeks where you don't see him and then a blinder and then 2 weeks you don't see him. I think he's been more consistent. You're right, but all of Melbourne has to get better with ball.
Yeah, and Oliver, interestingly enough, it was a great kick from Oliver that set up a critical goal late in the game. So well done to him. The other one, Sam Wiedemann.
Yep.
They just have to play Sam Wiedemann.
Yep. He was great in that final series a couple of years ago. Interestingly, they didn't play on as much after Marks.
No, they had developed
lowered the eyes, showed a bit more poise, didn't have that frenetic style, and it showed at the weekend. So well done. Gold Coast still had a crack. We've spoken of West Coast and Adelaide of just, it's going to be a long season. And Geelong v Brisbane, I'm going to give credit here to Tom Hawkins. He's kicked a three and he's kicked it on a damn good player.
Harris Andrews.
It tends to match up pretty well on him.
And the other one, Paddy Dangerfield is in Brownlow form. And Sammy Menegola is a guy that flies under the radar at Geelong. He was very, very good. His two goals came at very important times in the game. He had 26 disposals, which was as many as Dangerfield had. And Bruce McAvaney.
Yes.
Great commentator. Like, you won't find a better research commentator, a more thorough commentator. But he tempted fate in this game. He declared that Little Gaz, coming off the five-day break, was struggling a bit. And then Little Gaz came to life. And so did Geelong. They came to life with him. And they did a job on Brisbane. I was really impressed with Geelong. I thought that's as good as I've seen them play this year. But yeah. I was a bit disappointed in Brisbane.
Yeah, I was too. But I don't know. I was... For me, picking that game, and we all had shockers. I mean, I got three.
Me too.
Yeah. I was intrigued to see how both sides would go at the SCG.
Yeah.
And we found out. So well done, Geelong. And you're right, well done, Menegola. And he was up against it early because there were a couple of outs of that midfield.
Yeah, so Duncan, interestingly, Chris Scott is not ruling Duncan out this week yet, although he didn't sound overly optimistic that he'd play. Quinton Narkle also going down in that game. All right, let's move on to our favourite segment. It's time for Josh's mailbag.
More and more and more, you got to get it up, the more you get up, the more you mail. When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hello, Newman.
Hello, guys. Massive week. The mailbag had a heap over the weekend and right after the last Thursday's pod, so we'll get straight into it. Dan from Perth. We'll start with Jack from KO. Where's KO? Do I know?
KO as in KAYO.
Just KO. Jack from KO. Watching almost all the weekend's football content on Fox, there was little to no discussion of the Freo versus Saints game. Now, this is an irate, Jack. What the hell do these guys have to do to get a bit of a mention?
They've had a mention on the podcast today. Duff and I both had it in our two highlights of the weekend. I agree. Totally agree. As Duff suggests, sometimes it's pretty hard when you're over here and you get overlooked. But what a great comeback. Would rank in their top six all-time games, Duff, do you think?
It's one of their great wins. Yeah. It's easy to forget great wins, isn't it, over time? But that's one of them.
To be one of them.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Jack. Dan from Perth. I find football analysis tends to tell us what but never why. Any explanation is often a motherhood statement. They were just harder at it. They are a good clearance team. If it was that simple, they wouldn't have a footy department arms race going on. I really want a deeper understanding of this game. Is it because broadcasters know most footy fans don't care about the tiny details and I'm in the minority? Or is it because commentators don't have the means or ability to break down tactics and strategy in a constrained broadcast format? Thanks. Great show. Tuesday and Thursday are fast becoming my favourite parts of the week.
It's a good question, this one.
It is.
And it was interesting. Someone raised this at the weekend. I can't remember.
I read an article on this at the weekend.
So I tend to think it's a little bit of both. So unless you're in the inner sanctum of a club, it's hard to know exactly what they were trying to do at any given moment. But the other thing is when you get down to the minutiae of all this, as Jared Waitley would say, it's hard to make that interesting for your average theatre-going fan who's watching it on the TV, and you don't want to bore them and have them switch over to something
else. It's hard during commentary, I think, for the most part. That's when you get half-time, quarter-time breaks. You can go into that a little bit, or post-game analysis. During the game, it is a bit hard for broadcasters just to be weighed down by, you know, going into the minutiae of it.
And if we're right, so, like, I can describe Rankin's three goals in detail, but the coaches who are watching the game, they will be looking at structure behind the ball, structure ahead of the ball, and structure around the ball. And they'll also be looking at where the dangerous space is, those sorts of things. So they spend a lot less time watching who's actually got the ball in their hands and what they're doing with it than the rest of us do. Now, I'm sure they catch up with the replays and get as excited about it as all the rest of us do, but their job is different to our job, and it's hard to make their job interesting for your average theatre-going fan.
Thank you very much, Dan from Perth, with that one. Chris from Secret Harbour. My question is regarding the rule kicking in danger. Is this still a rule or has it been given the boot? Pun intended. So often I'm watching the game and I see a player kick the ball out of the air or off the ground and the opposition player isn't attempting to collect it. It angers me that it's never paid while we see stupid free kicks for various interpretations of holding the ball given all the time. What are your thoughts?
It's still a rule.
So the key is what is the trigger that the umpire looks for? And generally it's the player who has his hand kicked shaking his hand. if you get your hand kicked and you shake your hand, you will get a free kick.
There's a fair bit of congestion around the footy too, so sometimes it is a bit hard to see. But particularly I think we often forget how difficult it is for umpires who've got a really hard job. And when you've got a heap of players in there and the footy's kicked off the ground, it's really hard to see. Sometimes we do have a better angle. But it is still a rule, I can assure you, and it is paid occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally.
You do occasionally hear it paid.
But generally, there has to be some signs of pain.
Yeah, some hand waving, as Duff says.
So that's a message to the AFL players. Make sure you show that you're in pain.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chris from Secret Harbour. An international flair to this one, guys. Eduardo from Boston.
Ooh.
Confusion. He had a bit of confusion about the Dark and Shearer, him and his wife, who's originally from Willoughby. They thought you were Dark and Shearer because you shear dark sheep's wool. They didn't realise Darken was a place to explain last week that it's a natural place between...
Yes, Darken is a place between Williams and Collie, which is about 2.5 hours southeast of Perth, which is, of course, the capital city of Western Australia.
Glad our listeners are thinking things through. That's good.
No,
Thank you, Eduardo.
He came to that realisation last week. But his question is, I hope this message finds you well. I'm a big fan of the podcast based in Boston, Massachusetts, the USA, and I've not missed an episode since listening a little over a year ago. So thank you very much for that, Eduardo. Second, the gap between Fife and someone like Darcy Tucker or Connor Blakely in the midfield is much greater than the gap between Fife and someone like Jesse Hogan as a key forward. So he's basically saying, even though Fife was so well used in the forward line on the weekend, wouldn't you say he would have more of an impact in the midfield? I think you've touched on it earlier this podcast.
Yeah, so to me, Fremantle needs an area of the ground where they're feared. And to me, Fife in attack gives them that. If you've got Fife in attack, Hogan can play higher and play that link-up outlet game that he
in
plays.
In a perfect world, well. You've got Lob.
Lob's a marking target. Yeah. Tabana leads to the pockets a bit, which means they get spread.
Yeah.
And they spread the defence out. And you've got Michael Walters coming through there. And Michael Walters is basically a two-goal a game player. If Fife kicks his two or three and Walters kicks his two and Lob kicks his two and Hogan bobs up with one or two and Tabana bobs up with one or two, suddenly you've got 8 or 9 goals. If Lockie Schultz weighs in and one of the midfielders weighs in, you've got 11 or 12 goals. You win most games with 11 or 12 goals in the modern era. So that, to me, is where it's at. Of course, if they're getting flogged midfield, then Fife goes back to the midfield. But you know what? He doesn't need a visa to get back in there.
No. And I think
you just shift him.
Tucker is definitely – I mean, he's not going to ever probably close the gap with Fife, but he's getting closer. Tucker's been on the improve. We don't know about Connor Blakely because he hasn't played.
And don't forget that the ones that are emerging, yes, Tucker is emerging, but Brayshaw and Chera are the ones that are emerging. Now, maybe in 2 years' time, the gap between Fife and Brayshaw and Chera won't be that big.
Mm.
Thank you, everyone, for emailing in. We had quite a few we didn't get to, but I think some of them were asked in the podcast anyway.
All right.
Thank you,
so,
Josh.
So, Josh, how many tips?
For this week?
Yes.
Ever since my good round, you really want to know my tips.
I do.
I had three this week. It was a tough one.
I don't think we're the Lone Rangers. I think a lot of people had it was a really difficult round to tip. We knew that going in. I didn't expect to get three. I thought I'd redeem myself on Sunday. I was wrong. But we will fight on this week.
I must say, I was in Seabird on the weekend.
Beautiful spot, Seabird.
One of the best pubs.
How was the pub meal?
It was excellent. But we were watching the Freo game and Lockie Schultz got that mark. And I said, he's going to miss this. He missed one from a similar spot earlier. And there was some Freo faithful there. They almost knocked my block off when I was already disregarding the goal. And then they proved me wrong.
Great tackle and a nice goal under pressure too from Lockie Schultz at the weekend.
Should have been 5 up, Freo. So Bailey Banfield didn't make the distance from 20.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that happens. But anyway.
You're a hard marker, Duff. They've come back from 37 points down
and
no defence.
No, I'm happy. And was in fairness to Bailey Banfield, it was a very smart kick of his to square it up to Lockie Schultz, enabling Lockie Schultz to milk the 30 seconds off the clock, knowing that they were going to be in front after he'd taken his kick. So a great victory. Thanks for joining us today. Come back and join us again on Thursday. We will be talking about
the game here that evening.
The build-up to the Collingwood-Geelong game. I'm told that by lunchtime they're expecting 20,000 tickets to be sold. That's a fantastic response by the WA public to two teams that don't actually hail from here. Look forward to joining you then. I'm frightened of tipping again, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I'm frightened every week.
We will talk to you then.
Remember, if you are a fan of the podcast, send us your thoughts. Do you have some big AFL ideas that just keep getting lost on your mates? Or has ISO allowed you to crack a big footy problem? Well, send us the topic you want two of Australia's most experienced and respected footy journalists to discuss. Send us your name, location and thoughts to me at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. Just make sure you chuck mailbag in the subject. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.